Okay, this is Women's Focus. I want to introduce my next guest. With me today is Miranda Viscoli. She's the board president of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. It's a nonpartisan organization whose sole purpose is the prevention of gun violence in New Mexico. And they focus on the safety of children, families, and communities. So welcome, Miranda.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I got to get your mic on. Yeah, there you are.
Am I on now?
Yeah, you are. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. And also joining us from Minnesota, thanks to Miranda for making that connection, is Mary Lewis Grow. That's G-R-O-W. She is the creator of the Student Pledge Against Gun Violence, the Youth Anti-Gun Violence Campaign. She started in the 1990s and for which there is currently a resurgence of interest. She's the co-founder and board member of Protect Minnesota, an organization also working to end gun violence. And thanks to Mary Lewis, we also have on the line Jane Moline. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. I'll find out in a moment. She's practically a neighbor of Mary Lewis, who is a gun owner. Jane is a gun owner, that is, and also a gun owner who is passionate about the need for reforming our gun laws. And they are on extension phones in Mary Lewis's house. And are you both there with us, Mary Lewis?
Yes, we're right here and looking forward to this conversation.
Good for, I say hooray for a really decent phone connection. And Jane, are you with us?
That's me. Yes, I'm here too.
Did I say your name right? Is it Moline or Moline?
Moline, just like the city.
Okay, wonderful. Moline, just like the city. What city?
Moline, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I could have said Moline like the tractor, too.
I'm not from that part of the country, so neither one of those I recognize. Anyway, I'm so glad that you are together, and I would like you, Mary Lewis, which, by the way, you told me through all of our email communication that Mary Lewis is actually your first name. It's Mary hyphen Lewis.
Yes, I didn't start out with a hyphen in between the two, but it just, otherwise, people thought I was gratuitously throwing in my maiden name, so I've started hyphenating it, at least for people I don't know well.
So it isn't your maiden name?
No, Lewis. Mary. I was born Mary Lewis as my first name, and it's like Mary Jane, but it just makes people's life difficult.
Yeah, how many times have you had to explain that? Anyway, I won't get stuck on that. So I'm hoping that you can read for us the student pledge that came about in the late 90s.
If there's a moment to elaborate on it, I would like to just talk about the premise. And the
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Of
Good.
Course.
Okay. So here's the pledge. It's very short and very simple. I will never bring a gun to school. I will never use a gun to settle a personal problem or dispute. I will use my influence with my friends to keep them from using guns to settle disputes. And then followed by a final affirmation. My individual choices and actions, when multiplied by those of young people throughout the country, will make a difference. Together, by honoring this pledge, we can reverse the violence and grow up in safety.
Oh, thank you, Mary Lewis. So this is back in the late 90s. What was the impetus for you to write this pledge, and what did you do with it after you wrote it?
Well, there's, as far back as I can remember, this country has been plagued by gun violence, and particularly when there started being school shootings and shootings that where young people were the victims. It always struck me that you would have these talking head panels of adults talking about what are we going to do about these young people and their use of guns and their violence. And I'm sure, like all of us, I'd read stories about young people in cities with a very high degree of gun violence who told their friends what they wanted to wear when they were lying in their coffin after having been shot to death. I mean, it was such a reality in some parts of the country. And so I thought, you know, I really would like to think of a way to connect young people to the issue of gun violence in a way that helps them see that gun violence isn't inevitable. It's not like the weather that's just always going to be there just as a backdrop to people's lives. And I thought it would be wonderful to try to think of a way to communicate that gun violence is not a great big amorphous mass. It is the sum total of individual decisions, that a person on a certain day has a grudge against somebody and a gun is available and they pick it up and they use it against the person from whom they're seeking revenge. And that it's the sum total of those individual decisions that add up to our epidemic of gun violence. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful? I've always had a belief in the power of simultaneity. I'm sort of a sucker for things like Hands Across America and people being on the same page at the same time. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if there could be one day where young people across the country could unite their voices and overcome the sense that they as individuals may not have power, but that if they metaphorically join hands and join their voices, that their individual commitment to not perpetuate the problems of gun violence could add up to a sea change. And so part of it was an effort to give young people a voice, because they're often left out of decisions that affect them, and to suggest to them the power of 1+1+1 multiplied into the millions. And I realized that it was going to take somebody with national prominence to kick this idea out into the public sphere. And I was in Washington and met Senator Bill Bradley. He was then one of the U.S. senators from New Jersey. And I asked him if Congress could help kick this out into public consciousness. And it took a year of back and forth with his staff, because I came back to Minnesota and his staff wasn't going to hook me up on a direct line to their senator until they were convinced that they thought this idea had merit. But it did work its way back to Senator Bradley's desk, and he introduced a Senate resolution calling for a day of national concern about young people and gun violence and national distribution of the student pledge, and it passed unanimously. And what was exciting was that it brought together the most conservative Republican members of the U.S. Senate, Strom Thurmond, Jesse Helms, and the most liberal, Paul Wellstone, and I'm trying to come up with a name, somebody who was then in office. But anyway, he had 83 original co-sponsors. And so it did seem to me that maybe inadvertently almost, I had come up with something that could unite people on both sides of the political divide on the gun issue.
A far different Congress than we have today, huh?
Very different. But still, there were a lot of conservatives there. Anyway, yes, a very different Congress. But I think because this is not overtly political, it garnered a lot of support. And then
it wasn't overtly.
In my own circumstances, it sort of... gun violence started decreasing. My husband became ill with a long illness, and so I stopped being so proactive about spreading it. But then after Newtown, people like Miranda said, wait a minute, we need to revive this program. And so over the last, I would say New Mexico was kind of the forerunner in this resurgence of interest, but over the last year, I've had calls from New Orleans and Atlanta and South Carolina and Iowa and a lot of different places, so that it's in rebuilding mode. And my hope is that at some point, again, we will have all over the country millions of kids joining their voices and hopefully feeling some power to reverse what too many people see as an inevitable part of our lives.
Thank you, Mary Lewis. I want to get back and later maybe and talk about what more recently has happened in New Orleans around the student pledge for against gun violence. I want to bring in Miranda, who is with the New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. And you've been with the organization. Are you one of the co-founders?
Oh, well, actually, I wanted to make that correction. I'm actually co-president on the board. Our other co-president is a fantastic man named Dr. Reverend Eberts. So I just wanted to make that clear. We all founded it together. So we founded the organization 3 years ago. We were concerned about what gun violence was doing to our state and what gun violence was doing to our country. And we all got together, rolled up our sleeves, and got to work. And we've done a crazy amount of work in three years and done some pretty creative ways to build awareness on gun violence prevention, as well as continue to work on legislation to fight gun
violence. Your organization used to be called New Mexicans for Gun Safety. Why the change in name?
We really felt that after the Charleston shooting that the name wasn't serving us. The NRA would love for us to think that this is about safety, not gun violence. And we have always been about gun violence prevention. And so we knew a name change was hard, especially when you're a young organization and people are just remembering your first name to begin with. But we felt it wasn't serving us. It wasn't who we were about. We are about gun violence prevention. And another reason was I was literally in a meeting that was going very, it was very odd, and they were treating me really strangely. I'm thinking, what is going on here? It turns out they thought I was the NRA. Because
who's
of our name.
It was
with the
safety.
School. Yeah. And I thought, you know, there's another reason why we really need to change our name, that we're about gun violence prevention. And so that's why we did it.
And so, historically, just to add a footnote to this, historically, when the NRA first began, they called themselves the Gun Safety Organization because they simply taught safe handling of guns and marksmanship. And, you know, that would have been a very appropriate use, and it then became radically politicized. But I think, Miranda, maybe didn't you feel that you, even though the NRA no longer is primarily about gun safety, that historically was their use of the...
Exactly.
I want to transition from the student pledge sort of like seamlessly, hopefully. It doesn't have to be so seamlessly. I reminded you through some emails that you wrote something.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot I wrote it.
Well, I don't know how I came across it, but
it was in the Albuquerque Journal.
It just popped up. It was in the journal?
So anyway, it was an amazing moment. So We were doing the student pledge against gun violence. We've been working on now. Next year will be our third year. We've passed a resolution with the Santa Fe Public School Board, with the New Mexico School Board Association, as well as we passed a memorial in the state Senate, all to support the student pledge. And we were awarded a grant by the Lanel Educational Fund to pay for the pledge in Rio Riba County. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But this last year, we were working with a school, and we were talking about kids who had been shot and killed in New Mexico, and they were brainstorming about what they wanted to do. It was St. Michael's High School, fantastic student wellness action team, and they always get on board for the student pledge. We didn't know while we were having this conversation that the horrible Oregon shooting had happened at the community college. This was in October, right. And so, you know, when I got in my car and I looked at my phone, I thought, oh my gosh, how sad, another shooting at a school. But it really hit home. And I went back the next week to help the kids finish the project. They were actually painting footballs and ice skates and all the things that the kids that have been shot and killed in New Mexico, what they love to do. And they were putting that with the kids' names, with a heart of tennis shoes around it. The tennis shoes represented the children that we had lost. But then when we were working in Española with their fantastic student council, we worked with them for 5 weeks on a student pledge project. And I was literally driving there, and the teacher who ran their lunchtime effort said, oh, don't come. There's a gun on campus. We're on lockdown. And that really affected those kids, because they were sitting there trying to do everything they could do to raise awareness about gun violence in schools and gun violence in general. And here they're on lockdown and couldn't work on the project, the gun violence prevention project.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting when I read that here you are working with kids and at some point, and I don't know if you were working with those kids when the Oregon shooting.
That was St. Mike's, and then when we were working in Española,
right.
That was when they literally had a gun on campus.
Right.
So you really hit home twice in 2 weeks how important the student pledge is.
What else did you write in that editorial? What were your main points? Well, they were pretty strong.
They were. Well, I think if I remember correctly, we were talking about the importance of getting out the vote. That was when Obama came out and said, hey, if we want to really do something in this country, we need to refuse to vote for politicians who won't vote for gun violence prevention laws. And I really commended him for doing that, because here we're seeing the effects over and over of not just mass shootings, but 92 people a day shot and killed in this country, 270,000 a year injured. I mean, we're a crazy time. And so I think he's right that we need courageous politicians and not careerist politicians that aren't afraid of the NRA and are actually voting for what the people in this country want, which is gun violence prevention. I think when I wrote the article, I was a little disheartened because I felt that, you know, does any of this matter? You know, but we get back up and we keep on fighting.
You know, I was reading that the paradox of polling, that Americans, number one, they support universal background checks. I read that all the time. And they support universal background checks and they doubt that they work. What is that all about?
Well, I think the problem there somewhat is education. I don't think people realize how bad it is with online sales, so that you can basically go on Arms List and buy anything you want, no questions asked. You can go on Facebook and buy firearms. You can go to gun shows and buy firearms. We've never had an opportunity to see if universal background checks are going to work in our country right now. So I think that's one of the most important things we can do. And if we're looking at legislation for this session, for the New Mexico session starting next week, Representative Miguel Garcia, who has been championing closing the gun show loophole for 3 years, we have worked with him every single year on this. 83% of New Mexican voters want universal background checks, not just at gun shows. This is simply at gun shows, and we can't get it called by the governor. So one thing we really need to see is that people call Governor Martinez at, I have the number, I know it by memory, 476-2200, and ask her to call HB51, the bill that closes the gun show loophole. And at the same time, we need phone calls into Nate Gentry's office. So Nate Gentry has a bill, HB91. It's a fantastic bill in a sense, because what he wants to do is get the names of those who should be prohibited on the NIC background check system. And this needs to happen. But Miguel's bill pretty much already does that, but it also includes closing the gun show loophole. So we need to call Nate Gentry and say thank you for HB91, but we have to, in addition, close the gun show loophole. If we don't, we're putting the names of folks who have no business buying a firearm on the list, so they the background check, they won't pass the background check, but then they go to the gun show and get a gun from a private seller because they don't have to conduct a background check. So if you call Nate Gentry at 505-508-0782, or email him, even better, at nate4nm@gmail.com, and tell him, hey, thank you for HB91, but we have to include closing the gun show loophole. And one last thing, when legislators say, oh, I can't, you know, I might not get voted back in. Well, Representative Miguel Garcia, while he was fighting for closing the gun show loophole, was up for reelection. He won by a landslide in Atrisco County. So business that you won't get voted back in, we have to stop being scared of the NRA.
And Miguel's is HB51?
Miguel's is HB51. Tell Governor Martinez to call it, and then Nate Gentry to help push that bill along as well.
Mary Lou, in just one moment, I just want to ask, is this the short session?
This is the short session.
So is this the time for such bills to come up?
Well, it needs to be called. So it's up to Governor Martinez to call it. She supports HB51.
Oh, she
supported
does.
It in the past, and she said if it comes to her desk, she will sign it into
And her
action.
Phone number, one more time.
Is 476-2200.
Okay, Mary Lewis.
Well, I was just going to talk. There were actually two things that occurred to me during what Miranda was saying, and I think she just made the point that people have to stop fearing the NRA power. But I would argue, and I've actually got a whole PowerPoint presentation about the power of myth in blocking progress on this issue. And I think that one of the biggest myths that needs to be exploded before we can move forward on this issue is that the NRA is invulnerable and that they hold the power of life and death over the political futures of politicians. When in fact, what's really remarkable is that in the last four presidential election cycles, starting in 2000, the vast majority of the money that they channeled to their candidates and channeled into defeating the people who wanted sensible regulation, they lost those races where they invested the most money. And they, you know, I can tell you in terms of, let's see, I have right here at my fingertips what the percentages were. In 2000, the NRA invested very heavily in seven Senate races, that they put millions into those Senate races. They lost five out of those seven Senate races. They even lost in Missouri, where a dead candidate, Mel Carnahan, died 2 weeks before the election, but his name couldn't be removed. He beat John Ashcroft, even though he had died. Seven out of nine of the NRA's biggest expenditures in House races that year went to losing candidates. Six of the seven NRA-endorsed gubernatorial candidates that year lost. In 2006, more than 80% of the $2.6 million the NRA spent in independent expenditures went to losing campaigns. In 11 races where they spent the most on advertising, only two of the 11 were who won were NRA-backed candidates. And in 2012, the last presidential race year, the Sunlight Foundation tracked the success rate of the biggest PACs in terms of bang for the buck. And it is shocking to people when they find out that the large PAC that came in dead last in terms of success rate in targeting their money to winning candidates, dead last was the NRA. They had a 0.83% success rate.
Well, that's pretty
interesting. Now, in 2014, what we saw, and that reversed. In 2014, the NRA did, most of their favored candidates did win, but I would say that was associative, not causative, because, as you remember, in 2014 was the big Republican sweep. And Republicans, the mood in the country was, you know, elect conservative Republicans, and those people in general tended to be very resistant to reforming gun laws. But I think we have to get over this myth that you can't oppose the NRA and live to tell the tale in terms of your electoral survival.
And I think in addition to that, Mary Lewis, and I think you'd agree with me, well, we've never disagreed, is that we have to dispel the myth of how many gun owners there are. So the NORC at Chicago University just came out in March 2015 with a study that showed that 28% of Americans own guns, and the majority of them own eight firearms, according to the Washington Post. And so if you look at that, you think, well, why are they getting the vote? I mean, not that we don't respect gun owners, but at some point, shouldn't we be able to, you know, make some movement forward on gun violence prevention in our country when we're talking about the fact that only 28% of Americans own guns? We're not talking about the majority.
And then I think this would be a great place to bring Jane.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say this is a perfect time.
Smaller percentage of Americans owning guns, it is another huge myth that gun owners are this monolithic block who vote lockstep with the NRA. So, you know, ta-da, Jane.
Well, before you speak, let me just tell everyone, if they just tuned in, this is Women's Focus that you're in tune to right here at KUNM. My name is Carol Boss. In the studio, we're talking about gun violence prevention. In the studio with me is Miranda Viscoli. She is the co-president of the board of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. And on the phone, joining us from Minneapolis, We get two folks on the same phone on extensions. We just heard from Mary Lewis Groh, who is the one who has created the student pledge to end gun violence. And also on her extension phone this afternoon is Jane Moline, who is a gun owner and very passionate about gun violence prevention. So jump in there, Jane. Sorry it took so long to get to you.
No, that's fine. The conversation is very interesting. We've had guns in our house since I met my husband and married, and because we have guns, I'm really worried about gun safety, and I worry that other people could own guns. And so,
what are your guns for? Why were they purchased? Are you a hunter?
My one son does hunt occasionally, but he's not really regular about it. But no, most of our guns are used for a reenactment of the defeat of Jesse James' gang in Northfield, Minnesota. And so we have a number of period guns and different guns that we use for reenactment. So we actually collect some of our guns. And they're not used because they're actual, real, old pieces. And we also have remakes of old guns that we can use in the reenactment. And we have many, many long guns that we use for the reenactment, which were used by the citizens who were defending Northfield against the James Younger gang. And so we've used them. We have a cabin in the North Woods in Minnesota, and we go there. We don't hunt there, but my nephews do frequently, and we have sat there. I enjoy target shooting. I really enjoy that with handguns. But I am just really worried when my kids were little about gun safety, and I'm just appalled at the casualness with which some people treat guns.
And how do you feel in have you ever been, let me ask you this, have you ever been a member of the NRA?
You know, I don't really remember that I ever was a member of the NRA, but we were really, our kids went to the classes. I mean, that was the safety classes that they had when they were like 12, when they were really quite young. We made sure they had safety right away. Our kids are very responsible about guns, and they were aware of guns from when they were very, very young because they were around them. We have guns all that we use, and some days we have piles of guns because of our the reenactment and so forth. And so we have multiple cases that we end up hauling out and taking with us, and they are, when they were very little, they knew the rules. And I am totally perplexed by the idea that people would not want to have more laws regulating who can actually even own guns, but also how many they can have. I'm just surprised at, and for me, it's the appalling showing of these open carry people who just seem to want to they make me very frightened, and I would love to see more rules about that.
Miranda,
I have to tell a funny story.
Mary Lewis, Miranda, it's hard when we're not in the same room. She just sort of, I can't see you raising a hand, but Miranda had just done that a few moments ago, so let me let her jump in.
I just wanted to quickly talk about, Julie, that's a good point you brought up about the open carry folks, and we have a real problem here in New Mexico when we're going to try to fight for legislation. You're allowed to open carry in those committee hearing rooms, which means when we're showing up to fight for a gun violence prevention bill, we're standing with a lot of folks that are armed and loaded. And it's intimidating. And what it becomes is that, you know, democracy should not be about the person who has the biggest gun. And it's hard for us to get folks into those rooms because they're thinking emotions are high, people are angry, and the person who's angry at me has a gun and it's loaded. And I don't know why that's democracy.
I don't think it is democracy, and I think that it, with people taking that extreme a way to try to prove their Second Amendment rights, I feel that they're treading on my First Amendment rights and on Miranda's First Amendment rights and Jane's and those of us who do go to the Capitol of whatever state we're in working for legislation, that it has a very chilling effect on the free exchange of ideas and on debate. And I don't know why more people are not talking about the impinging on people's First Amendment rights.
Right. I've been doing so much thinking, and I was thinking about the whole idea of constituencies. And when I started hearing, I know MoveOn had a campaign, MoveOn.org, about getting gun owners together and making a presence at the White House, gun owners who support, as Jane does, gun violence prevention. And I think having a building of those kind of constituencies, and I think the gun owners are really an important one, and I hope they continue to organize, and I hope the constituency throughout the states continues to grow, because I think that is really powerful. I know when I read about MoveOn's organizing, I was going, wow, I think that's really brilliant.
It is absolutely brilliant. What's interesting...
Was Mark Carman, wasn't he one of the reasons that MoveOn started trying to get people who are gun owners to work with them?
Who's Mark Carman?
There was a selfie video that this man, he's from Alabama, he looks and sounds like a good old boy, and he did a selfie video, and the video opens with him holding his, I don't remember if it was a Glock or what's another common semi-automatic handgun. Anyway, he was holding it up so you almost couldn't see his face at all. The video started with this gun, and he said, "This is my Glock. I love my Glock. I'm really good at shooting, and I love to shoot." And then he said, "But I could go out on my front porch tonight, and I could... some stranger could come up to me and offer me so many $100 to buy my Glock, and I could sell it to him, and he could walk away, and I wouldn't have any idea whether he was a serial rapist or a serial killer, and that just isn't right." And then he goes on from there, and he disputes so many of the myths that the NRA tries to perpetrate, that, you know, if they're background checks or registration, the government will have a list of all the people who own guns, and then they'll come in and confiscate them. And he said, look, you know, if the government really wants a list of who the gun owners in this country are, all they have to look at is at the NRA membership list. You know, that's pretty valid. So that's a phony reason. But I think because he came across as not the traditional proponent for better laws, that video went viral, at least among a lot of the gun violence prevention people. And I think he has become sort of a magnet for drawing other gun owners who feel the same way. And just one funny story I want to tell about Jane and how I knew who she was. We knew each other, you know, casually. We had mutual friends. But I think the thing that got us working together was that I was having lunch with friends in a coffee shop, and I overheard Jane talking passionately about the need for licensing and registration and background checks, and I thought, oh, my gosh. And I think I heard her mention she was a gun owner. And so then we continued the conversation. But, you know, I would say that Jane is perhaps even more of a proponent than I am for licensing, registration, all these things that the NRA tries to sell as impinging on freedoms and as anathema. So I just thought I would throw that out, that was how we met, because I heard her talking so passionately in a restaurant.
So, you know, when I heard Obama's talked to the nation a couple of weeks ago. I was really moved, and I was moved by his tears, regardless of what the Republicans had to say by it. And I was I'm moved by his commitment, because he doesn't always, he's not strong on a whole lot of things that I'd love to see him be strong as he is about this. So I really respect him a lot. And I thought he was so convincing that he was actually going to, I was convinced he was going to convince people, and there would be some shifting of hearts and minds, you know?
One can only hope.
Yeah, one can only hope. I was
your
really
mouth to God's ears.
And, you know, he spoke so eloquently, and he talked about the Second Amendment, and what makes you think that we're going to take away, you know, remember when he said that Second Amendment, I know all about the Second Amendment. I taught constitutional law, so said President Obama. And I just thought it was amazing. And then, of course, the talk had not even ended. And right away they jumped in and said Paul Ryan made a statement. He probably did it 2 weeks before the talk. And all of these said, he's, you know, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, all the presidential candidates, this is the start. He's going to take our gun rights away. He's going to take it away. And that's why I'm sort of, I think the constituencies are really, really important, because there's so much fear-mongering. And it's beyond my comprehension that people cannot understand, and it's easy to find this out if you go online, like the president said, we are among, he calls it, advanced countries of the world. We have, no other country comes even close to the number of gun shootings that we have, the number of massacres.
I think it's true, and I think America's done. I mean, I think we're at a tipping point, and I think what he did was extremely courageous.
Yes.
And where and I, Mary Louis Groh and I have watched this, there are so many local grassroots groups that have popped up in the past 3 years that we don't even hear of, that are working 24/7 on gun violence prevention, because they're done. The moms are done, the fathers are done, the grandparents are done, the children are done. So I really think that we are right now at a point where in the next 5 years, I really think we're going to start seeing a change. And I think what Obama did was very courageous. And people said it wasn't that much, but it was actually a lot that he did, that he could legally do. I think our concern is that people on the statewide level are going to say, oh, we don't need to do anything now because Obama did this. And for one, there's going to be the lawsuits, and it's done on the federal level. We still need to pass a lot on the state level. So I think we need to caution ourselves to know that this is an example of we need to just work harder and a lot harder, and know that that doesn't take care of the problem, but it begins to allow us to work at the state level and make sure that we get the job done that we need to finish.
And as he talked about, and we all know that it will take probably years and...
100, I think, probably.
But I would like to piggyback. I agree with Miranda that I think we are at a tipping point, and I can't tell you how many times I have hoped that we were at that tipping point, but I think there are several indicators. Yes, it's true. People go out and buy more guns after a mass shooting, after Obama gave his talk, and so on. And that's grounds for pessimism. But here are some things that I think are different from anything we've seen in the past. I think, for one, we've had presidents who've done the right thing before. Bill Clinton signed the Brady Bill. He signed the assault weapon ban. We've never had a president who used so much eloquence and passion to really give voice to how important an issue this is for our civil society. But two other things that I don't think we've ever really seen before. I think corporate leaders have been afraid to take a stand for fear that it would hurt their business, that people who oppose any kind of change in gun laws would be incensed and wouldn't buy their products or whatever. And what we heard about when Washington State had a referendum on background checks, which passed, is that corporate leaders were speaking out in support of the referendum. People like Bill Gates, Bill Gates' father, who runs one of the biggest law firms in Seattle. And I think corporation leaders are starting to find their voice and see this not as a losing issue, but as a winning issue. And then the other thing that I think we've never seen before, but in the first Democratic debate,
Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton were almost trying to outdo themselves. They were competing with each other as to which one was the most supportive of reforming our gun laws, which one was the most hated by the NRA, and wearing that as a badge of honor. And I think we've had politicians who whose positions were aligned with reason and the desire for change, but I don't think we've ever had that support quite so public, so out front. So I don't know, Miranda and Jane, if you agree, but I see those developments as grounds for hope.
I agree with you 100%.
I'd like to jump in. I also agree, and I think most important is education right now. We have a public that really is not aware of how successful the gun lobby has been in getting rules to change in their favor to promote the sale of more and more firearms. And so we're going to have to take, as it will take us years to unwind the damage they have done, like not banning the CDC from studying guns as a health problem. I think those things, if when the public knows about it, they will, and how easy it is for someone to get a gun without any background check right now.
Miranda?
And Jane, I agree with you 100% there, and I also want to say that, and that's something our group does a lot, is we educate folks about how weak our gun laws are in New Mexico. We just did the health policy forum in Albuquerque. We speak at churches. We speak at schools. We speak at, right now and next week, we'll speak at the labor forum, anywhere we can, because we hear over and over, well, why don't we just, you know, why are we passing new gun violence prevention laws? Let's enforce the laws we have. Well, I think it's really important for New Mexicans to know that we boast some of the weakest gun violence prevention laws in the country. In fact, we have an F from the Brady campaign. For instance, if you have a violent misdemeanor, or domestic violence, violent misdemeanor, you can still purchase a firearm in this state. You can buy as many firearms as you want. I mean, and that's just one example of where I really think it's important for the public of every state to know where our laws are weak and where do we need to work on changing those laws.
Do you know about, I just read this, it's from something I found online, and it's stated in November that Hawaii, I had no idea about Hawaii, that more guns are bought in Hawaii. I mean, lots of guns are sold in Hawaii, and yet their rate of gun homicide is at just 0.62 victims per 100,000 people. United States as a whole, 3.99. That's a huge difference. So
they have very, very, very strong gun laws.
Well, that's exactly. Well, I was going to lead to that. Yeah. There's an enormous.
I had never read that their rate of gun ownership is high, and I question that actually because I think that the latest studies show a correlation between high rates of gun ownership and high rates of gun deaths, injuries, and suicides. So I do question that. It doesn't line up with what I thought. But what we do know is that Hawaii has very, very, very strict laws.
Yeah, they have they're required to obtain a permit and sit through a two-week waiting period before making a purchase.
And also keep in mind they're an island. And so while Chicago has very strong laws, too, they're surrounded by a bunch of areas that don't have strong laws.
Right.
So being an island really helps in this situation.
An island unto yourself.
An island unto yourself where you can't just take your boat over to the mainland and buy some guns. It's very difficult to have a lot of straw purchasing
To show that even though maybe it's not as much as Mary Lewis may be challenging some of those, but it seems like there has been a surge in the purchase of guns, and yet their rates of shootings, of murder, are much lower because they have those laws, that waiting period.
And they have these beautiful beaches. I mean, why do you want gun violence?
There was a quote in a Washington Post article I read online that I think is really good, and in terms of, you know, oh, laws don't work. This was, I think, one of the last lines that the columnist, his name was Jeff Guo, wrote. He said, when laws make it harder for people to sell guns to criminals, criminals will have a harder time finding guns.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
You know, we only have a couple of minutes left, and one thing I definitely want to bring up, even if it's going to be briefer than I had hoped, is the importance of people getting involved, and there's all kinds of levels in how people can get involved. And I want to start with you, Miranda, and talk about your organization, what people can do. It could be even doing, calling the numbers that you just gave a while ago, which I'm going to ask you to give again, to call Governor Martinez, tell the reason why and the number, and other ways people can get involved, because we have to get involved if we want to see something happen.
Carol, you're 100% right. And the great thing is we have a fantastic group of volunteers, and anybody who wants to volunteer, I'm going to tell you where to go, and you will never be bored. There is something for everybody, and it is the most exciting volunteer work you'll ever do. So if you want to volunteer with New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, you can go to our website, www.newmexicanstopreventgunviolence.org, and just scroll down to the bottom and you'll see our email account there. Again, if you want to do something right away, you can call Governor Martinez. Even better, write her a letter. Anybody that has the time to write letters, write letters.
Dear those Susanna.
Dear Susanna. I am hearing a song in my head. Write her or call her at 505-476-2200 and tell her to support Representative Miguel Garcia's bill, HB51, to close the gun show loophole. You can say things like, why are we protecting the Second Amendment rights of a convicted felon? In addition to that, call Nate Gentry. There are two numbers for him. There's 508-0782 or his office, which is 986-4776. And again, thank him for HB91, but tell him it does not go far enough. We need to include closing the gun show loophole.
Any suggestions, Mary Lewis?
Well, I totally endorse everything Miranda has said, and I can testify, because I live part of the year in New Mexico, I can testify that it is a fabulous group of people, and that people who volunteer will meet some of the nicest people they know.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think it's almost time. Christina Bacin is here, and she's going to be taking you through the afternoon on Raices. I want to thank you, Mary Lewis Groh. Any final words from you, Jane Moline? Thank you for joining us today. I thought it was important to have a gun owner on.
Education, education, education.
Exactly. And you're all doing that. Gun
24/7.
New Mexicans to
New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence.
Oh. Can I just give the website for the student pledge?
Oh, please do that. Yes, do that.
It's www.pledge.org, and their curriculum suggestions, their ways that teachers and schools can weave these education materials into their own disciplines, how English teachers can use the materials, how social studies teachers, art teachers, to follow up on the idea of the importance of education, the student pledge is a vehicle for starting those discussions with students.
And if there are any teachers out there in New Mexico that want to do the student pledge, again, go to our website, get hold of us, and Mary Lewis Groh and I do this student pledge in New Mexico, and we would love to help you get your students in New Mexico on board with the student pledge against gun violence.
Okay, thanks all of you. Jane Moline, Mary Lewis Groh, and Miranda Viscoli. We've been emailing for so long. You were once on the show while you were in that island, Hawaii.
That island, Hawaii.
And we did a show on Gun Show. And I was so convinced we met, and obviously we haven't.
We are soulmates. We've met before.
We've met before.